After Things is brought to you by patreon.com/weirdthings. Thank you for supporting this show.
Hello and welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Mean, joined by Brian Rushwood.
Oh, hello, friend. I'm just whittling a pin stick here.
And Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Well, I'm the button-up clean guy. Right, now get your whittling shavings off of my podcast surfaces.
I'm sorry. I will.
We're just riffing here for some comedy here in the After Things program. Hi, Andrew Mean. Welcome.
So I got the new iPhone, I would say that this is the happiest I've been with an update in maybe like a few years. And the reason is that I just returned my old one, but it's a little bit lighter. It's appreciably lighter. You pick this thing up, it's not like, it's just wafer thin, but it is appreciably lighter when you pick it up. The form factor, they did a thing here where, the screen is much closer to the edge, mm-hmm. So you feel like you get more screen. I haven't put it in a case yet because it actually feels really nice to sort of hold on to. I'm very curious to try that. One of the reasons I wanted to get it is being a VR nerd and stuff, is it with the update, it's going to be able to shoot 3D video with these two cameras here. And so I'm very anxious to try doing that to see what that'll be like.
And and the update has not already happened, but it's incoming and it'll go to that phone first.
I think it's only going to go to the phone. I think those cameras are the only ones that can handle it, because I think that they both have to have a same, be able to have this match the same lens thing.
Yeah, I never thought I would be this guy, but this is the longest I've ever gone without buying a new iPhone. I think this is a 4-year-old iPhone. And the only thing I'm upset about it is that it's quiet, and that's why I am whittling a pen cap to make a shiv that allows me to clear out some of the lint in the speakers. Outside of a longer battery life, faster processor, and a better camera, is there anything else under the sun?
I mean, that is the iPhone story. I would say that the lighter, being lighter is really... I do appreciate the fact that, you know, like, particularly if you use the Pro Max, is that like it's a big beast to hold on to. You know, the speed of the processor, I mean, it's just, there's just no lag. There's just nothing, you know, it's just such an amazing sort of feature there. But, you know, we're in a great point where, like, I'm not like, you got to get an iPhone or you got to get this or whatever. Like, Android people feel like it's like you're insulting them if you tell them, like, I have an iPhone. And to be like, I have an Android. Like, cool, I have another phone. I have an Android right here. You know, I don't buy Android phones as often as I buy iPhones, but I buy them.
You're not on the stand right now, Andrew. You're good. Yeah.
We all agree with you.
This is not a you thing. Like, that's the form that these freaking phone wars take now, is like, who cannot be phone warring the most?
I'm going to be honest, Bryce. iPhone users don't care what you say. Android people get really upset if you don't mention Android. It's gotten better, but it's not the iPhone users that write any angry, you're ignoring my platform, and I have like it's, you know, it's like, oh, look, iPhone got USB-C, fine. Okay, let's go back to why did they not use USB-C? Because back when they had the Lightning port, which was the fastest port available, USB-C wasn't a standard yet, USB-C. Yeah. And they made a decision. Should they have waited that long? I don't know. But they had the fastest transfer for like a couple of years until USB-C got standard.
We're live at the line of the front phone wars.
No, I'm saying, but the point
the,
is...
The anti-ironic phone wall frontier has taken over the west coast of the United...
Both, Bryce. I own both, and I can tell you what I like about both, and I can tell you what get to be sort of the silly sort of thing.
They're chanting, this. I've got both here on the front lines.
Bryce, it's a mat. This is a great ice scraper, by the way. You can ice in your car like this thing. You need to. You want to peel some wallpaper? This sharp edge on my
and your Pixel.
You know, yeah, my Pixel is like it's. This is this is the thing. I got the Pixel. I'm like, you can't be serious that this is like this sharp, weird edge thing here. Because I think, I mean, like, I think they do a lot of cool stuff on the Pixel. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah. And it's
talking about platform wars, are you? I've seen my time or two. One time I signed up with the TurboGrafx 16 up against the Genesis generation.
Oh, geez.
I think the Folds, that will be the phone of the future once they can actually make them and make them reliable. They're going to be, you know, I think every phone in the future is probably going to be a folding phone because those are damn cool. You know,
they are. And they've already hit the good enough level where it's like, yes, it's never going to be a perfectly flat screen right now, but it's close enough where it's like when somebody opens up their phone, I'm like, oh, that is big and easy to see.
Well, and right now it's like the tablet software ecosystem is not great on Android. The way like the iPad ecosystem is pretty solid on iOS. It's
very great. Yeah.
To the rumor is now that Apple is working on the foldable device that Apple's working on will be an iPad before they work on or release an iPhone that is foldable. Presumably there's more space to work on those fingers. And because this is rumors and reports that because the iPad audience is smaller, there's less chance of volatility if a foldable iPad is a mess up like some of the early foldable phones were.
So one of the things we've talked about before is the idea that Apple is maybe aiming for a device-less, like right now we have the supercomputer that sits in our pocket, the thing on our wrist that we can easily glance at. We're looking at the thing that will strap to our face that'll allow us to just wave our hands and get everything we want. Do we ever see a time that the thing in your pocket goes away? Because I personally I think I'd legit be sad. Now, like I'm already surprised at like I bother to bring my laptop when I go on the road, and I keep never touching it. I keep being able to accomplish everything I want to accomplish just on my phone. But it's hard for me to picture a world where the thing in my pocket goes away.
Where the thing that you don't, I mean, that you described a world where that is not likely to happen.
Oh, I'm aware. I just checkmated myself.
You've just asked a question of asking anyone else to challenge your... That's the opposite of the Socratic method, I think.
I haven't been... I went on a trip and I forgot to find pull out my charger, so I haven't had my Apple Watch on for like a week, 2 weeks, which is as long as I've done without it. But because it had cellular, I felt comfortable just walking around with that and no phone, because if I needed to, I had my Apple Watch. I don't like the display. I don't like the controls. I don't like a lot. I like the hardware a lot. I don't like, and they know that the UI is still evolving. But I do think a wrist thing or something that if I know if I fall down, I can press a button and get help is kind of seems cool to me.
Yeah.
My phone is, I work from home most of the time. So my phone is always, it's maybe near me or it could be in another room. I'm not as attached to my phone. I spend way more time on my iPad than I do my phone. I also use an iPad with a stylus, which is, game changer.
Yeah.
The amount of writing that I do and sketching on there is huge. But yeah, I think Apple's going for that interesting whole ecosystem. What's really fascinating is I just pushed out an app for, they'll talk about later on, but as an Apple developer, they're pushing how much they're pushing Apple Vision. And one of the things that makes Apple Vision really interesting is the idea that it will work with your existing iPad apps.
Right. That,
and
that, like how they're doing with the, with, they're pushing those apps on macOS as well. If you've got an iPad. So
like I developed an app extension and I went through and developed it for iOS. I'm like, oh, now I got to go through the trouble developing for Mac. And it's like, oh no, it's in the macOS store. You can just download it and it'll just tell people like, yeah, this is designed for iPad, but it'll work here. And it's like, oh shoot. Like I forget that. I forget like how much of that extensibility is there.
Yeah. It'll be exciting to see what a lot of the, especially this app portability. Like I'm looking at getting a new computer in the short term, and I'm thinking of getting a Mac because I've got that MacBook Air, and I've got a lot of I've got my little programs, and Adobe stuff's been updated. Those chips are good. If you get a good chip, like there's, you know, they've got.
They're the fastest. They're like the and for the my I'm a Kool-Aid drinker, so I'll play that. But I would say that I feel justified. The setup that I went to now is I have a MacBook Pro plugged into a dock, and I'm using my monitor. I always loved IMAX. I was hoping for a bigger screen IMAX. If they'd had a wider screen IMAX, I would have bought it. And I'm so glad I didn't now, because my computer is my laptop, which is an overpowered laptop that's got amazing battery life. The battery life, like, I've had friends with like Windows PCs, and like they're always looking for cords to plug in. I'm like, I'll take mine on a trip and never charge it.
Yeah.
Because the battery life is phenomenal. But like, it's such a great thing. So I have this dock here that I just slide it into, and it connects to the big monitor. And if I go on a trip, I don't have to unplug anything, because I just slide out of the dock, put it in my bag, and I run, and there's my computer. And so I'm not worried about file jumps and, you know, using Time Machine to back everything up. So it's been a great solution.
Yeah, I a corollary to that, or a parallel, would be my increasing comfort with just everything's in the cloud. Like, I don't really care what device it is. Can I go to Google? Can I say, my things, please? And then they're there, no matter what computer it is. There is a tedious amount of two-factor authentication and so on. But it's almost as though the computer itself, like, I kind of almost feel like I don't have a computer. I simply exist mostly in the cloud at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and I, you know, I presumably, if I'm going to put more money down into a computer, you know, it does need to be able to do editing. And because I'm coming from such a weird delta from either the base, like M1 MacBook Air, which is like a good chip in like a cheap laptop, or my almost decade-old desktop PC, it's like you kind of it's gonna be hard to miss. With whatever, because everything will probably be a pretty good upgrade from more reliable.
Yeah. I think we're in a good place all around. Yeah, Google announced that they're going to maintain updates for the Pixels for something like 5 years or something, like a really long period of time, which I hope they do. I hope they do that, but remember they did the Pixel upgrade plan when they just canceled it, you know, less than right at the point everybody's going to be able to upgrade. So.
I mean, that's one of those things where like economics brains turns on, and I ask myself, what is their incentive to actually follow through on that promise? And I don't know what it is.
It would be not having that reputation of being a company that is not got stuff that's not a moving target. Oh no, I get it. Yeah, they can dig deeper. They can dig deeper.
They know, and that's a crazy, like, they are an incredibly innovative company. So I don't want anybody to feel like, oh, I'm going to be bashing on them or whatever. And then I can go on about things that Apple's frustrated me. Like, hey, tell me again why this Jon Stewart show may have got canceled. I want more details on that. But you heard about this, Bryce?
I have not heard about this story.
Well, allegedly, and I say allegedly because, again, as we've seen, news comes out and then you find out there's another side to it. But Jon Stewart has a show on Apple TV, and then they decided that they're not going to keep doing it because he and him reached an agreement to longer do the show because he had an episode where they were going to talk about AI in China. And I can tell you which one of those is a more bigger concern for Apple. It has the words AI in it, but also CHNN.
Yeah.
And so that's the, hey, Apple, that's the, you want to make programming and you want to be in bed with China in a huge way, you know, and you also want to be a virtue symbol to the rest of the world. You got to think closely about your partners. If you find yourself censoring yourself, even though something may be right or wrong, may be right.
So, okay. If I'm reading between the lines, it sounds like he wanted to do kind of a takedown of the boss that he was employed by.
Or they something just China. I'm speaking completely, but apparently they had an episode where the two topics were AI and China, and then I think Apple probably have a bigger contention about giving some of their content about AI stuff. I think it'd be more about China. And I think that, like, yeah, they were, Apple's like, oh shoot, China's gonna be upset with this because like AI's not gonna do anything to them, you know. Not like Skynet's gonna come after them for being critical. But China will, you know, shut down all their stores and their manufacturing. And, you know, that's the thing that makes me anxious about Twitter is that I think Elon, for the most part, has good intentions in mind. He's also been an apologist for China and said stupid things about Taiwan. And that concerns me about, like, you know, the guy, the world's richest man, controls Twitter and also is very afraid of the Chinese.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a good bit of skepticism that it's directly an editorial killing of that show because of a China episode. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know.
Could be that it's a bad show that nobody watched.
I mean, let's read the reports, because I mean, it was not, it was literally, apparently there was, they did not want to do this episode. Stewart said, okay, I'm not doing the show. Not that it was canceled. It was Stewart made the decision.
I believe that there are reports. I don't know. I wonder.
So you're skeptical that a large company with heavy involvement in China might tell people, hey, back off on talking about China, because we don't know anybody personally that's ever happened to?
No, but if you're saying I need to definitely believe that is exactly what happened, then I'm going to ask.
That's not what I said about Bryce.
No, but you're asking. I'm just trying to be generally skeptical here, and I'm not trying to put it up to a lot of specific, intricate.
I don't know. I'm just saying that I found it like you thought you were skeptical that Apple would be hesitant towards canceling something because it was offensive to China. That's what I thought. I thought you're skeptical.
I'm saying that. I'm saying, like, it is plausible that I think that this rumor is not the real motivation behind it. I think there could be many, there can be other things beyond that.
The rumor could be the excuse for unrelated behind the scenes reasons, you know, is what you're saying.
I don't disagree that it is that China very much could also have been it. But they ordered a John Oliver like show. I think they also expected that they would get something here, and they I don't know. I broad skepticism all around, I say.
Yeah, I would invite you to read it where it wasn't a matter of the show being canceled. Literally, they came to do an episode, and it was Stewart said, Stewart basically had told them, if you're not going to do this, then we're not going to do the show.
Sounds settled then.
No, it's not. I'm just trying to give you more context here, Bryce. I'm not trying to argue with you. But I'm just trying to give you more context on what was said.
And I'm not in a position to read more into that, but I am excited to see what that actually looks like if I give it a little more of an examination.
So when is the new iPhone going to have Magic 3D Vision?
Soon. And let me just give you one more context. New York Times, which obviously reported that Stewart informed his staff on Thursday that Apple pushed back on topics relating to China and artificial intelligence. That's the full thing. That's all we know is an alleged. Just want to give you that thread. It's been a thing that's covered in all the entertainment blogs are covering that. And they're saying that this is what happened on Thursday in the staff meeting that Stewart told. Could be. No, they don't want to renew, but I'm going to tell them because the push could be this. But I just want you to have that added context. It's not like, oh, I heard a rumor of this. Like, literally, it's like, insiders have said this has happened. We're going to hear more. We'll find out more. We'll find out what the real state is. But it's a scary situation because they're economically very dependent upon it. But anyhow.
We saw one of the most curious incidents from where I was standing is I don't know, back to back, we had both the NBA and Blizzard Activision essentially enforcing diktats from China because they didn't want to lose their access to China, which was a very strange moment to see. And I've not seen much of that since then, but it sounds like a lot of that has deeply affected you.
People go out of their way to not criticize or be critical of them, which is their major global power in an economy, but because of business, remember the Top Gun Maverick jacket? It had a Taiwan thing, so they removed it, you know? It got pulled out, but you get other ways of where people just, you don't hear about a conflict because people just, no, don't go there. Don't even talk about it. Don't even do that. And like I said, you're absolutely right, Bryce. We don't know anything about the accuracy of this, whatever. And I'm not saying you're saying it's not true or anything like that. We don't know anything about this. But it is this sort of alarming kind of thing where you think about, like, well, there has been a pattern where big media companies and companies in general will just avoid any criticism of China. And that concerns me.
So if I remember correctly, at the time, and forgive me if I'm talking out of school, we can delete any of this, but you seemed fairly optimistic upon returning from China, saying that the young people, you know, they understand how to use a VPN and get access to real information. Are you less optimistic now?
Well, yeah. I mean that what happened was that started getting to be you a lot of them kind of started to get more isolated, cut off. Some of them are still there, and there is the you know, remember the ones I'm talking to are not your average Chinese. I'm talking to every kid that I knew, every young person I knew in their 20s, their parents were connected and wealthy and members of the party, whatever. And so there's the elite. The elite still have it pretty damn good and whatnot, and they kind of have their little freedoms and stuff. And I know just stay in your lane, you'll be fine. You know, what will happen, you know, after Xi or whatever, you know, Xi has been cracking down left and right, and Xi is a hardliner. Xi is a communist, and he is a, you know, in a totalitarian sort of person. And so at that point, it wasn't clear the direction he was going to go. And then it kind of went to like, well, that's where he went. And so that has been the trajectory.
So it sounds like there's not an easy workaround the getting real information fix anymore.
I think that we need to shout louder when we see that, you know, like I said, I buy products all the time from China. I do business with China. Like, I'm not talking about like, oh, we need to divest or whatever. I mean, a little bit, it might be bad. My frustration comes from sort of the hypocrisy. Like, I love Apple, but I watched the latest keynote, and I watched this big thing about environmental pledge and sourcing labor and do this about, hey, we care about the world. It's like, okay, cool. You're in bed with people that, and like, oh, US says, yes, we do bad things. And I can read about them all over the newspapers because we can talk about it. And they're in bed with a country that may, and I do not have confirmation of it, but may be dictating their editorial content now. Yeah. That's scary. Where does that extend to? Apple has a news feed. You know, are they going to sort of modify their news feed to sort of say like, hey, like, let's not do as much this. Let's not focus our coverage here. Let's do this.
So the scary. Biggest fear with Apple would be that, despite their bravery of standing up for, you know, they announced that they would not hack one of their own devices for the FBI for in a domestic case. Meanwhile, maybe they're more liberally flexible when it comes to a foreign power.
Well, I can imagine for Apple. Yes, they are making money off of services at the moment, a good deal of money off of services. But we also know that they make money on hardware and the services that hardware comes along with. And we've heard reports of their meddling within the Apple TV ecosystem because executives want it to be family friendly, want it to be stuff that is, I think at the time, network safe types of media. And John Stewart's show is not that, is more of like a John Oliver thing, which is a pretty pointed political message, which is tough for Apple because it's in such a weird spot. So I see it as like a sanitizing, I totally see it as a potential sanitizing play because if you're Apple, just say, you know what, maybe we'll just keep on the safe stuff. You'll just keep doing Charlie Brown and the Peanuts, and we'll let you do the hard hitting international geopolitics.
Yeah, and I think that like with any org, there's a lot of camps in there. I think that the people that greenlit again, I'm not accused. I didn't mean to sound like I was accusing you for not taking things literally or what. It was not my intention. It was. That there are people that the people at Green that show, like, yes, we want to show when Truth to Power is great, whatever. Then there's other people going. There's, and it might be, you know, the heads are like, you know, no, we're really involved in China, guys. We can't do this. And like, well, we want to have autonomy to do this. And I guarantee you that it could be, and I don't want to go off and, you know, being like taking it for true, but we've seen historically in the past, though, is there's some camps that are like, hey, let's do this, and other camps that go, whoa, you can't. And then internally there's a disagreement. But yeah, I mean, Apple that stood up to the government and said, we're not going to hack our own phone. I respect that a lot. And I think there's a lot of that still there, but there's still,
On a galactic scale, Apple standing up for China in this moment behind the Jon Stewart show is probably not. It doesn't even move the needle as much as that backdoor stuff.
If it is true, I'm like, don't even do news shows. Don't even do that. If because I as a consumer, you should be telling me, by the way, here are the topics we will not be covering because of who we are. You need to tell me this, you know, because otherwise the Truth to Power shows would frustrate me because you would watch how selective they would be about that. And at first they're exciting. And then you're like, man, you keep avoiding this other thing. And then, and remember too, thing about Jon Stewart, this was the guy that went on Colbert and talked, said flat out that, you know, COVID came from Wuhan.
From the Wuhan virus facility. Yeah.
Which makes me think there might have already been some anxiety at Apple to begin with about the idea of like, well, remember we did this. And so
that's interesting. Do we have any productivity picks or picks of any kind?
I'll share mine. I talked about this a little bit within the show. But I've been trying out this Kaggi search. Kagi search. The idea is that it's, what if you just paid for a good search engine? Would you pay for a good search engine?
Oh my God. So it's not ad supported.
It's not ad supported. It doesn't track you. It doesn't, at the moment, you can't even turn on a search history.
That's wonderful.
But I will say, like, give me something to search. That's the thing is, I don't know what to search now.
History of fire eating.
Oh yeah, here.
Things to search for.
History of fire eating, and so you get the Wikipedia for fire eating. You get the Human Marvels. Hey, you get Houdini's History of Fire Eating.
Hey, all right, I already love it.
That's our YouTube.
Look at all that Brian Brushwood.
Bitch Media, Penn Jillette, The Fire Eaters. A Trump story, I think, national. And so the idea being like, okay, like, hey, what is this story? I don't know. Meet the Fire Eaters. Let me summarize this for me. And so they have their universal summarizer built in where you give it a link to an article or a page and it reads it. And sometimes it takes a second and it just bullet points the thing for you.
That's tasty.
And it's the sort of thing where I generally trust the things that it says. The other cool thing about this, if you're really wanting to dive deep, is you can click this discuss this document button. And what would you think discuss this document does? Take you like a comment?
Leads you to a cesspool of other humans?
Takes you like a comment thread? No! It spins up a chat bot for you, and it talks, and it can talk to you.
Oh.
What is the opposing view of this article? That's one I've done.
You know what?
Here we go. The article does not explicitly discuss opposing views. However, some could be criticisms of comparisons, defensive policies, downplaying of rhetoric. But you know, like I think there's a really cool thing here, and I'm figuring it out. It's not like a, you know, I've talked about like Paste before, you know, having a clipboard manager. I think anybody could use that. I don't know that Kaggi is a thing yet for everyone, but with as often as I search stuff, even just here in the shows, like having search that you can really customize, having a summarizer there, like I think there's something really interesting if you do searching very particular. So Kaggi, they have a free thing. I'm on the free thing. Just get a free 100 searches. 300 AI stuff, but once you start paying, it gets unlimited. Their new thing is unlimited, $10 a month, unlimited. So, there
you go. My pick is I can't believe I'm saying this. Paying for my sources of news. The Economist has a number of wonderful podcasts. Some of them are like daily summaries of the news headlines. Then there's a weekly digest. But on top of that, they have Money Talks. They have Babbage and you know, talking about technology and all that stuff. And they're about to take all of their premium programming behind the paywall. And so I believe if you go search The Economist Plus or something like that, but like for $2 a month, you get all of those excellent, excellent programs. And I trust The Economist, and it's nice to have news sources that I trust, you know, and I do make a habit because I want to have a varied diet. I pay for the Wall Street Journal now. I pay for the New York Times and I make sure to read both. I'm into paying for my news because my news is what my brain becomes made of. And I think it's worth spending money on.
Nice. Now, this looks like a subscription just to their podcast products.
It comes free. If you subscribe to the magazine, you get all of this free.
Oh, okay. But you can just get the pot. Okay, interesting.
And I'll vouch for the Prince is all about Xi Jinping. It's very, very good. All of their stuff is very, very good. I like it a lot.
The Economist.
I got two picks here. If you guys, there's a YouTube channel I found at random called The Curiosity Show.
Oh yeah, back from the 1970s and 80s or whatever.
Yeah, it's an Australian show that's got all these little fun little, you know. I imagine if Brian Brushwood was a time traveler who found himself in the outback in the late 1970s.
Maybe Brian Brushwood, as a time traveler 5 years ago, found some pretty good episodes in there.
Yeah. Yeah, they've got hundreds and hundreds. They're just little, like how to make a coin and tell which side is up or not. It's not the production value of, you know, a scam school or, you know.
Which only makes it more adorable.
But it is, you know, some Aussies showing you really cool science stunts and stuff like this. So that's my pick for one. The other pick is I just watched this one about the ring illusion. Remember that from Superman. You heard about the Sam Bankman-Fried?
I've heard of that SBF, guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard he's a real piece of crap.
I hear.
Well, not everybody would agree with you, Bryce.
Oh. Tell me more.
I have not read the book, but you know, Michael Lewis has a book about FTX, about Sam Bankman-Fried, and he started talking to Sam Bankman-Fried when Sam Bankman-Fried was, you know, the wonder kid who was going to solve, you know, the economy and do all this sort of stuff. And then everything fell apart. And then Michael Lewis wrote this book that some people are taking exception to because it's kind of an apologist. It's sort of a very big defense of SBF. And Michael Lewis has gone on talk shows and stuff and says, I want this to be a letter to the jury so they can, you know, understand what he's really doing. And Michael Lewis has said some stuff, I'm paraphrased, kind of like, well, he didn't really do anything. If you know, it was more of a run on the bank that caused the problem and stuff and whatnot. And so it's been causing some issues. And so CoffeeZilla, who is an amazing YouTuber who does really good takedowns of crypto and whatnot, he did a whole piece where he kind of took down Michael Lewis's book. I like Michael Lewis's writing and stuff, but you know, it is a thing where you find out kind of the backstory of, like, Lewis had a friend who was, you know, was one of the subjects of Flash Boys, said, you got to meet Sam Bankman-Fried. And Lewis went to go meet Sam Bankman-Fried and was taken in and was, you know, thought he's really sincere and whatnot. And I'd always, you know, when FTX came on my radar, I remember I just saw I saw Sam Bankman-Fried's like face plastered all over, you know, like, you know, in posters and stuff in SF. And that's always a warning sign for me when the CEO of a company is spending an immense amount of effort to sort of push their name out there. Like, I was like, I'm like, I don't know who this is, but I'm suspicious, you know. And then you hear it's FTX's crypto, and I'm like, I want nothing to do with that because that's just a bunch of whatever it is.
But what was it? Without any specifics, I remember you telling me, Brian, whenever I'm in a social gathering, there are two things that trigger very loud alarm bells. One is when anybody makes even the most casual joke, obliquely or not, about meth. And the other is when they talk about crypto.
No, I don't know if that was me, but
I relate.
Yeah, I have a thing where I would get asked, like, hey, can you talk to a startup about AI? I'm like, is crypto in their business plan? You know, and like, well, you know, like, oh, we're doing a thing for kids, a game thing for kids, powered by crypto. Like, yeah, because kids have, you know, Ether wallets. Like, they're totally into that. And it's just, and then I understand. I don't fault people, and I think, like, I'm a believer in the overall idea. But anyhow, the point was CoffeeZilla, who does great takedowns, did a takedown of Michael Lewis, and you kind of realize, like, ooh, this does not look good for Lewis.
Yeah, I might check this out right now.
There we go. Check them out. CoffeeZilla on YouTube.
Yep. Cool. Gentlemen, it's been after.
Woo-hoo! No.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.